This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, say to language, you look parched. And language says, oh yeah, I'm gasping for a cup of tea. And I say, wait a moment, I'll just pop the kettle on. What do you want in it? Milk? Coming up in today's show, we'll be getting toasty, not as in warm, or stoned. To warm up, here's some word history. Arctic. Arctos was the ancient Greek word for bear. But the region is not named after the polar bears that live on it. It got its name because of the Great Bear and Little Bear, the constellations that are always in the night skies of the Northern Hemisphere. The brightest star in Little Bear is Polaris, the North Star, and for the last 1,000 years or so, the Pole Star, as it appears to be stationary above the North Pole. So, that which was northerly was, in ancient Greek, Arcticos, near the bear. Thus the region up at the top of the world, near the bear, got its appellation Arctic. Antarctica is simply a contraction of anti-Arctic, as it's at the opposite side of the globe to the Arctic. And of course, it's bear-free. Quick note before we begin, if you visit theallusionist.org/transcripts, you'll find episode transcripts, which are helpful when the audio is a little unclear, as it is in places today. I think you'll understand why, given the location of some of the guests. On with the show.
Where are you speaking to me from right now?
The geographic South Pole.
If it weren't dark outside, Amy Lowitz could look out the window and see the actual South Pole marker.
I'm here at the South Pole working for the University of Chicago on the South Pole Telescope as a winter telescope operator.
I'm Christine Moran, and I'm usually a postdoctoral scholar. I'm on one-year leave to operate the South Pole Telescope down here at the South Pole in Antarctica with Amy Lowitz.
And when did you last see daylight?
April, yeah. I think at least 3 to 4 months of total darkness.
And a few weeks after the sunlight disappears for the last time before the totally dark months of Antarctic winter, something odd starts to occur. People begin forgetting... What was it? Words! Words. And they drift off without finishing their...
It happens. It happens.
Sentences! This is Alison Barden, known better as Sandwich. She did a variety of jobs in Antarctica on and off for 10 years, summers and winters.
I mean, just from a personal experience, sometimes you just stare off into space or stop sentences in the middle of them. You're just going along talking and then kind of forget what you're talking about. Or sometimes you lose the word for a common thing and you just slow down a little.
I'm definitely more prone to being spacey, more prone to occasionally losing words or not being able to come up with the exact precise word that I wanted.
People, I think, are pretty supportive of each other and, you know, just kind of like, yep, I get it. Like, forgot what you're saying? Yep, been there. And I think that just becomes part of your communication. You just start to understand, like, yep, that's how it is.
This phenomenon is known locally as getting toasty.
Toasty is sort of a Antarctica slang term that just kind of refers to all of the mental and personality changes that happen when you've been trapped in the Antarctic polar darkness for a little too long.
If someone's being a little cranky, then you could say they are being toasty.
Or if someone walks into a room and can't remember why they're there, or can't come up with a word, or does anything a little bit silly and out of character, you might accuse them of being toasty.
Or you might use it as an excuse for why you were late or slept in or forgot a meeting.
So I think the medical term that mostly encompasses what people mean by toasty is T3 syndrome or polar T3 syndrome.
The altered thyroid function that is polar T3 syndrome is one possible explanation for toasty behaviour.
It's not a very well-studied or well-described phenomenon.
Tom Baranski is an endocrinologist.
An endocrinologist is a physician who treats hormone diseases, like diseases of the pituitary or the thyroid or adrenal glands, or the most common one is diabetes. It is oftentimes the case that people that have problems with their thyroid describe fuzzy thinking or brain fog is the term that I hear a lot, brain fog. So what Polar T3 is, they followed some relatively young, healthy men who were going to be stationed in Antarctica, and they did some studies on their thyroid hormone function before they went to Antarctica and then after, I think, 6 weeks in Antarctica. And what they discovered was that when these men were in Antarctica, their bodies changed the way that they make one of the hormones, T3. Our thyroid makes two different types, T4 and T3. The T3 is the more biologically active one. And it increased the total amount of T3 that was made. And we don't really know why. It's probably an adaptation to exposure to the cold conditions, and the T3 is the signal to generate more heat.
Ah, so the Antarctic darkness might not be to blame for the toastiness.
Right, and even in places where it's not dark, you see T3 syndrome in people who live anywhere where it's especially cold, regardless of darkness.
The day I spoke to Amy and Christine, the temperature outside at the South Pole with wind chill was minus 76.7 degrees Celsius, minus 106 degrees Fahrenheit. Another factor is the altitude.
That's another thing here, is we're at 9,300 feet of altitude, but we're also functioning on a lot less oxygen than might be ideal.
But the altitude, the temperature, and the darkness might not be the main culprits either.
My guess is that there are many other factors. Being in a dark environment, in a crowded environment, and sequestered away, and may have effects on psychiatric function that could present, you know, with difficulty forming words or difficulty thinking.
Yes, if you're one of the skeleton crew that stays through the winter at the handful of year-round Antarctic bases, you can't really get out or go very far. And your social circle is pretty limited.
You don't see any new people. You're with the same people for months at a time. There's no planes in or out. There's no new anything. There's, you know, it's the same buildings. It's the same work schedule. It's the same people. So I wonder how that affects us.
Sandwich spent some winters at the biggest base on Antarctica, McMurdo Station, home to more than 1,000 workers over the summer, not counting the streams of tourists and visitors. But over the winter, there are only around 150 people living there. And right now, at the South Pole, including Christine and Amy, there are 46 people.
Of course, anyone in an isolated environment undergoes some personality changes. There's so much that we don't have to talk about because the weather's the same every day, and you know, there's no traffic here, really, no lines, nothing to complain about other than stuff that we've already complained about in the past.
Right. And also, you've told most of the same stories before, in that there's only so much, you know, personal life you can say that hasn't been said before. People also have less of a high standard for social interaction. So I feel like some of the conversations that you have where you lose words, or maybe they might sound a little weird if you weren't here, are more a product of just there's only 46 people here.
So perhaps toastiness is just cabin fever, and it's not the thyroid's fault at all.
You know, if you get on the internet, and you type in, like, stop the madness thyroid, there's just an unbelievable number of sites that will blame any symptom on thyroid hormone metabolism. And unfortunately, I think all too often it has nothing to do with your thyroid, but people want to blame the thyroid and thyroid hormone.
Exonerate the thyroid! So to sum up, not many studies have been done on toastiness and polar T3 syndrome, and it's not known what causes it. Luckily, it isn't incurable.
It's pretty short term. I don't feel like it has done any permanent damage or any dangerous detrimental damage. It's just some anecdotal thing that I think people notice.
Assuming you haven't completely lost all verbal abilities during the dark months, another thing happens in the Antarctic stations, which is common in small or isolated societies: new vocabulary.
Yes, it's kind of got its own language in a way that it's very layered. Do you know, it's like one of those situations you have to explain to get the joke. I think most are Antarcticans. They understand this like when they assimilate back to civilian life, as they try to explain their experience, but you have to go back a couple steps and explain why that's funny or how that happens.
Guess you had to be there if you want to understand such slang terms as toasty and fingy, that's someone who's new to Antarctica, or boondoggle, a little jaunt away from your station, or
consistent with T3 syndrome. We've forgotten the word.
Well, for example, the ice. It's called the ice. And the first time you hear it referred to as the ice, people think, they chuckle. They're like, oh, that's funny, that's cute. And you by that time, you've already forgotten that it's a novelty for some people. It's just one syllable reference over the Antarctica. It's kind of hard to say. It doesn't flow in a sentence so well, but you just say, how many times have you been to the ice? I'm going back to the ice in October. That's just everybody's common referent for it, at least in the American program.
But I tend to do it, and I've heard some other people do it as well, call anywhere not Antarctica the real world.
Within Antarctica, it's none too surprising that many places are named after explorers: Scott, Shackleton, Amundsen, for example, and also monarchs, because they always get a piece of that action. But not all place names are enshrined in the Atlas, yet.
Things get very localized there. So, like, even at McMurdo, there's a place that people know that's called Sausage Point.
Beneath the surface of Antarctica are buried many remnants from past Antarctic expeditions. A few years ago, staff were drilling to prepare a site for a new building, and a foul substance started squirting out of the ground. It was several tons of rotten sausage.
And everybody called it Sausage Point after that.
And of course, special terms are coined because people need to express concepts which aren't in the lexicon of warmer countries. Bergy Seltzer, the sound of air trapped in an iceberg being released as it melts. Snotsicle, frozen snot. And when excrement dropped upon excrement freezes into a big stalagmite, that's a poonicorn.
I've heard the term ice wife or ice husband, which is where a relationship, it's sort of what happens on the ice stays on the ice, regardless of whether one or both members of the partnership on the ice have significant others back home, that it's understood that the relationship, however close it may be while you're in Antarctica, or however serious it may be while you're in Antarctica, does not exist once you are off the ice. So I think that's what's meant by the idea of ice wife or ice husband.
There's more workaday slang too.
Jackets being called Big Red.
Oh, right.
Because they're very large and red.
There's Little Red, which is the smaller, less insulated version of Big Red.
Yeah, there's a lot of terms related to our clothing, our extreme cold weather gear.
It's very important.
One term that refers to clothing and sundry other items is skua. A skua is a type of Antarctic gull with a reputation for brazenly grabbing whatever it wants.
But in the slang context, it refers to where we put used items that we no longer want, but could still be useful to someone else.
So if you lost your hat or ran out of shampoo, you'd go and rummage in the skua closet or skua pile.
It can also be a verb, like, Amy, you should skua that shirt.
So that would mean if you tell someone they should skua something, it means that you should put it in skua, because it's not worth keeping.
It's actually quite a nice shirt that she's wearing.
Thank you.
We have a lot of military slang that have been adopted as well, because the U.S. military has had a presence on the ice since the late 20s. So we get a lot of the language from the military. We get a lot of language from New Zealand, because McMurdo and South Pole operations are based out of Christchurch.
And there are linguistic reminders that the first permanent Antarctic stations were operated by the Navy to start with.
For example, our sleeping rooms are called berthings, much like on a ship. The cafeteria is called the galley. Even there's some architectural little hints of it. Like, you see a lot of the doors will have a little window on them. A lot of those here are round, so they look a little bit like a porthole. So that they've even sort of made a nod to that history and the architecture of the building.
Amy and Christine are a couple of months away from the end of their year at the South Pole. After 10 years on and off in Antarctica, Sandwich works in the Bay Area at present.
When you talk about things that you've had in your recent jobs, well, my recent jobs were Antarctica. And so there is, and it's a very unique situation. So if you start to explain it, I call it dropping the A-bomb because it just kind of takes over the whole conversation. They're like, what? You were in Antarctica?
Big thanks to today's guests, Sandwich, or as her mother knows her, Alison Barden, who is the one who told me all about this subject in the first place, endocrinologist Tom Baranski, and Amy Lowitz and Christine Moran. Amy and Christine have both been posting about their experiences at the South Pole. I'll link to their Twitter accounts and websites at theallusionist.org/Antarctica, so you can take a look at their photos of the South Pole station and the amazing night skies outside. One upside to the polar darkness. Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is straminious, adjective, strawy, light, worthless, straw-coloured. Try using it in an email today. I know some of you want to check the spelling of the randomly selected words each time, so let me tell you, in every episode post at theallusionist.org, there's a photo of the dictionary entry, so you can see the spelling, the phonetics, and the etymology. Also on those posts, there's always more information about the episode, links to related material, and information about the sponsors' offers. It's all there at theallusionist.org.